I'm speaking to Kevin Pina, an independent journalist based in Port-au-Prince, Haiti. He's also the editor of the Black Commentator magazine. I reached him in New York, where he is attending Haitian solidarity actions and demonstrations. Kevin, hello.
Hello, how are you?
Not too bad. Just by way of an introduction, I wonder if you could maybe give a bit of a sketch of the political context for the excerpt of your newest film, Haiti, The Betrayal of Democracy, and give a bit of an idea of what led up to the coup in February of last year, as well as what has led you to tour throughout Canada and the U.S. speaking about the situation in Haiti with your films.
Well, I'm sure most people have read about, in one form or another, that there has obviously been a lot of unrest in Haiti. But if you scratch beneath the surface of the mainstream media reporting, there's a lot more to this so-called unrest. In my time in Haiti, I've been living there for 5 years. I've been covering Haiti for about 15 years now. But during this last 5 years, I've been producing a second documentary on Haiti. My first was called Haiti Harvest of Hope. Now I'm working on a second film called Haiti, The Betrayal of Democracy. And really what it covers is the period from 1999 to just about the present. And what it is it after Aristide's return in 1994, the situation on the ground, how the relationship, despite the fact that the Clinton administration and the international community, so-called international community, had returned him, that from the very beginning they were doing their best to hobble his administration, to limit his ability to govern according to the mandate of the majority of the poor who elected him through his Lavalas party. Lavalas, of course, meaning flash flood in Creole. So what I do is chronicle that period, which also includes the first peaceful transition of power in the history of Haiti, which was the Préval, the administration of President René Préval, to Aristide's second election, because if folks may not know, but after Aristide was returned in 94, he had to step down in office because his term had expired, despite the fact that he had spent and wasted 3 years of his mandate in exile. The so-called international community in the United States would not allow him to resume the 3 years he had lost, or the 3 years of utter repression and brutality faced by the population at the hands of the Haitian military. So there were new elections, and René Préval was elected. It was represented the first peaceful transition of power from one elected president to another in the entire history of that small country. René Préval ruled for his 5 years, and then Aristide was re-elected again in 2000, because the Haitian Constitution said that he could not succeed himself. No Haitian president can succeed themselves. They would have to wait one term out to be reelected. So he ran again in 2000 and won again by overwhelming numbers. Previous to Aristide's election, of course, people might remember that there were the elections of May 2000, in which there were over 7,500 elected positions, municipal elections and national elections. Out of those 7,500 elected positions, the Organization of American States, which included Canada, said that there were irregularities in the vote for eight positions, eight Senate seats out of the 7,500. With that information, of course, we know that they backed a small opposition. They gave them the right to veto. They gave them the right to basically alter the Haitian political landscape through obstruction, through non-participation. They then used those eight positions out of 7,500 positions to then taint the entire electoral process. This then, of course, was used as a pretext by the international community, which included Canada, to then begin to squeeze the Aristide government financially, to isolate it financially, blocking loans and direct economic assistance to the Haitian government. At the same time, organizations like CIDA, the Canadian International Development Agency and USAID, the United States Agency for International Development, began to announce that although they were blocking direct assistance to the Haitian government, they were not letting down the Haitian people because they were going to give the same levels of aid, if not more, to what are called NGOs, or non-governmental organizations, which are these sort of private volunteer groups, most of them non-profit, who receive their funding through organizations like CEDA and USAID, who have direct links and contacts with student groups, women's organizations, other kinds of grassroots formations under the guise of development and assistance of foreign populations. Because, of course, you know, these people are in dire need of our assistance because nothing could possibly prove that they could do anything well on their own. But that being aside, the USAID and CEDA and the European Union began to give direct assistance to these non-governmental organizations who were dealing with every sector of grassroots society in Haiti on just about every level, and they began to systematically cut out any grassroots organizations that had any affiliation with Aristide or Aristide's Lavalas political party, while at the same time only beginning to fund those organizations that were outwardly hostile towards Aristide and Lavalas, which then began to call for his resignation as well. So they began to fund and build an opposition to the Aristide government and to his Lavalas movement. So while they were squeezing the government economically, they were also instituting this program of building an opposition. All of this, of course, ultimately led to these images of thousands of Haitians, images that you saw in the mainstream media, that you saw in the Globe and Mail, that you saw in the Toronto Star, of this supposed huge opposition movement calling for Aristide's resignation. And of course, while the press, the mainstream media, and that included the Associated Press and Reuters, would only show us these images of the opposition, there were many, many more demonstrations with greater numbers that were demonstrating in the street, demanding that Aristide fulfill his 5-year mandate in office, only they never showed us any of those images. My film shows those images that were kept from us. My film shows the side of the story that the mainstream media has never told us about Haiti, which led to the lie, which led to the disinformation of our perceptions of what actually went on in that country, which has led to the misperception, to our lack of understanding of the role that our governments have played in actually destabilizing and overthrowing what was a democratically elected government.
It strikes me that little of this information, particularly this information related to the coup, but also information related to the continuous repression of both Lavalas activists and human rights groups, women's groups, since the coup of last year, little of it has made it out even to the supposedly more liberal Canadian press. I just wonder if you could comment on exactly how the lid has basically been kept on this information from most of the Canadian and American public.
Well, you know, it's interesting. You know, we live in a different age of media. We live with challenges to objectivity and to reporting that we never faced before. Our governments now have, and our militaries in particular, now actually rely upon modern public relations techniques. They now use and employ focus groups. They use that information of the effects of their involvement in conflicts abroad to judge what our impressions will be. They also, of course, have tremendous influence over what we know as the mainstream media or corporate media. When Marina Jimenez or even someone like Paul Knox go into Haiti, remember they're only there for a short time. They really have not been following this story long. So what they're going to learn about the story in 2 weeks or 3 weeks, of course, is going to be superficial, and it's usually going to be what's already been written, what's already in the archives of their news agencies. Also remember that what becomes important to those reporters on the ground is what they consider to be the essence of the story. And right now in Haiti, the essence of the story is the U.S.-installed government of Gerard Latour. So access to what they consider the essence of the story overrides over all other considerations. And the only way that they can guarantee the access to the U.S.-installed government, which they consider to be the main story, is through their embassies, through the Canadian embassy, or in the case of Lydia Polgreen of the New York Times, through the U.S. embassy. And so they're not going to write anything that's going to adversely affect their relationship with the U.S. embassy, because then it's going to cut off their access to what they believe, what their editors have deemed, to be the most critical aspects of the story, which in this case would be the U.S.-installed government. Now, of course, also you've got to remember that a lot of what those reporters write on the ground doesn't really matter, because so much of it is also rewritten by their editors in their offices. And if their editors don't rewrite it, then their managing editors rewrite it. If their managing editors don't rewrite it, then the publisher would step in, and the publisher is golfing buddies with the guys in the party, you know, whether it be the Liberal Party in Canada or whether it be the Republican or the Democratic Party in the United States, who are going to put a word in their ear, and that story is going to change, because really, the story is being shaped by what is being said by the government, what spin is being put on it by the government in order to shape and affect public opinion about what their role is in any given conflict or situation abroad. So it's a very complex system that ultimately benefits what our government wish us to understand, or shall I say, the box that they create, which those reporters cannot step out of, and which their editors cannot step out of, which their managing editors won't step out of, and in many cases where their publishers are actually in collusion with the government to define what the story is and the impression that our people will have of our government's role abroad.
I've just read a transcript of an interview you conducted Friday, I believe it was, on Flashpoints Radio. In it, you described a massacre that had just taken place in Bel Air, in Haiti, by the Haitian National Police, apparently in full view of the UN Stabilization Force MINUSTA troops. I wonder if you could talk about the escalation of violence in Haiti over the past couple of weeks, leading up to the anniversary of Aristide's departure.
It's very clear that we're facing a very grave situation on the ground in Haiti today. Just since last Thursday, the crews that I work with of the Haiti Information Project, which is an organization of Haitian and foreign journalists working together to try to give alternative coverage and analysis to what's going on, just since Thursday, we've pretty much documented more than 100 murders by the Haitian National Police in poor neighborhoods, where the calls for the return of Jean-Bertrand Aristide and the restoration of democracy continue. The Haitian National Police have been conducting, in collusion, undercover, with the United Nations, and certainly with the training and assistance of more than 100 Royal Canadian Mounted Police. They have been conducting what can only be called a campaign of extermination through violence to exterminate the majority political party, La Valasse, President Jean-Bertrand Aristide's political party. We've seen human rights violations increase. We've just wholesale slaughter and massacre, arbitrary arrests. According to the Catholic Peace and Justice Commission, there are more than 700 political prisoners in the capital alone. The way it works is terrifying. The United Nations will come in and they will do these massive sweeps to make sure that there will be no armed resistance after they pull out and the Haitian National Police come in and begin firing indiscriminately at the population and or making arbitrary arrests. We have to say that the role of the United Nations, and particularly the role of Canada today, is abhorrent. It is disgusting. At the same time, the role of so-called international human rights organizations is very discouraging. Amnesty International does not have its own team on the ground. Human Rights Watch does not have its own team on the ground. They rely upon politically partisan organizations for their information about human rights violations, and that's why a lot of it's not coming out, because a lot of those organizations are funded by USAID and seated in the European Union again, and they are skewing what's actually going on the ground. And so what it does is it forces organizations like the Haiti Information Project and other Haitian news agencies to have to do the investigation that these international human rights organizations should be doing themselves, but are not, are negligent, and are letting down the Haitian people, and are letting down the international public, because they are not doing their job in Haiti in terms of investigating, doing serious investigative work right now in terms of covering human rights violations and the human rights situation in Haiti today. They should be ashamed of themselves.
There's been, in the past several days, global actions calling for the reinstatement of Aristide, as well as an end to UN-sanctioned, basically, violence against lawless activists and other civilians in Haiti. Can you comment maybe on some of the actions that have been happening both in Haiti and throughout the world in the past couple of days?
Well, from what I know, I mean, a good source of information for people to go to is www.haitiaction.net. The information that I have is what's been coming to me from other journalist friends and other friends who are organizing throughout the world. I understand there was an action in Montreal yesterday, as well as on Saturday. Yesterday there was an action in Cap-Haïtien. I know that today in Haiti's capital there's going to be an attempt at another large demonstration. I'm sure that we can expect more massacres and more turmoil there, more brutality backed up by the United Nations and the Haitian National Police. I understand that there's actions in Paris. Worldwide, basically, most of it seems to be geared toward not recognizing the U.S. installed regime, but rather calling for the restoration of democracy and calling for an investigation into what many have charged was the kidnapping of President Jean-Bertrand Aristide on February 29th, 2004.
Mr. Peanut, thank you very much.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you. We were just talking to Kevin Peanut, an independent journalist based in Port-au-Prince. We reached him in New York.